Got it. Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night, and we're in the middle of a little adventure here that's just been so. It gets a little more exciting each week, actually, when I think about it. And I don't know how many times I've read the ABDs in the past. George and I have counted up how many times we've read some of the books that we've studied and realize that in a certain way as we go through them, we didn't see half the stuff. And as I read this particular volume, The American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold, I'm struck in the same way. I'm struck not only by the structure, by the content of the book, but by its very structure. And there's a certain brilliance to it that kind of is unfolding to me recently. That's quite interesting. Much like the deeper you get into some of the great literature, like Dante's Human Comedy, the Divine Comedy, there's more and more and more levels of structure that he provides to those who can see. And that's really what we're talking about. Silver Day and I have had some great conversations about that very thing. And why are we doing this? What are we studying? Why are we studying this book now after all this time, particularly after The Hidden Work? You know, Ivan, we really put some time into that. Mm-hmm. And we had, I was so excited by everybody's work, angelic work that took place and pulling stuff out that I don't know that they had, that they knew they had, but I know they had.
David, can you pause for a moment? I just figured out why you might.
I'm on pause. My whole life is now on pause.
We are pausing for a mic adjustment.
The tech crew.
For David's mic. And while we're paused, he can't do much because he's paused. But Ivan and I are not paused. And
that's right.
We could feel like juggling a little.
Well. Are we supposed to be speeded up if we're not paused?
If we're not,
no.
If we're not paused, we're just in a
normal mode.
But someone is speeded up.
Save me.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, let me hear. That's it.
Whoa! Now we got it.
I was lost, and now I am found. So that's a good thing. And one of the interesting things in discovering this part of our work together, and Lost Horizon, how many people are online right now? So we come together, there's 15, 16, 20 of us every once in a while to come together as a group because we want to work together as a group. Now, last week, do you remember what I was stumped on how to read this chapter called The Six Dimensions, right? Do you remember that, Ivan? And what was your, he vaguely remembers it. And what was your suggestion?
I suggested
talk into your phone.
Round robin.
Talk into your
phone. Oh, yeah, the phone's here. Yeah, I suggested we read it as a round robin paragraph each. Go through the book, the section.
If you paid attention, what you began to realize is that that group of readers, which is the same group on the phone now, Susan was there, I don't know if she's there now, but so was Hawk Lady.
I'm here now.
Hi there now.
Hi.
And that group created, at first we started reading. I would read, Ivan would read, I believe George, Harry, no, Judy was next, and then so on and so forth, right? And gradually what occurred is it wasn't George reading, it wasn't Ivan reading, it was the reader. And the reader, now you see what I mean? And the reader comes forth then as one entity, in a sense, and serves the purpose of reading. And in serving the purpose of reading, then the reader reads for those who are to hear. There's a recipient, and the recipient is who we offer the prayer to. That's how it works. So when we're working with this material, that's the space we get into, that's what we work with, and that's what's before us in the next 100 pages or so of this particular book.
Yes.
And if you look at the book, who's buzzing on the phone there? So tempted to not do that. And so right now on the phone, it's Susan, Pianjo, Silverdale, and Judy, if I remember correctly. And would you like to read again, everybody that's on the phone?
Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. Silverdale, okay with you?
Absolutely, absolutely. Sorry about that.
Okay, good. So now we've read the six dimensions last time, right? Remember that, Ivan?
Yes.
We read through that particular chapter, and we offered it up in a certain way. And then I reread that the other night, and I'm walking down the road. I'm reading down here, and I go, well, let's see. I'll go into the next chapter now and start reading what's there. But I hit a... So who was doing that?
Is that our phone here?
No. So whoever was doing that, try to see if just see what the cause was, and then try to not do it next time. And this is the order that we're going to read in, and we're going to read the very next page. Ivan, which page is it on in that book? Okay.
It's 41 in the 30th edition, 30th anniversary.
Okay. No, we're going to read
51.
The next page. And the next page after the six dimensions, Ivan, my book's falling apart here. I need a, I want a refund.
Oh, the reader's invocation.
Okay. The obligatory reader's invocation, David, I believe.
That's what we're talking about. And so... if you can turn your books to that particular page, and acknowledge that you're there, that you've got it.
Yes.
Got it.
Yep. Have it.
Okay, so then I'm going to read Pat, Ivan, Susan, George, Judy, Harry, and then me. No.
A line?
We're going to, each of us will read one line. I'll introduce it and read the first line. And how's that sound?
All right, is Hawk Lady on?
Hawk Lady, are you on? Okay. So I suggest that everybody that isn't a reader help us by focusing your attention without forethought on what we are about to be reading. That'll assist us in what our job is right now. Okay? Let's get started. And so let's begin. Obligatory reader's invocation. To the divine silence of unreachable endlessness.
To the divine silence of perfected knowledge.
to the divine silence of the soundless voice.
To the divine silence of the heart of labyrinth.
To the divine silence of the ancient mind.
To the divine silence of the unborn guide.
To the divine silence of the unseen guide. Protector of all sentient life.
To the divine silence of those of perfected knowledge.
To the divine silence of human, primate, incarnation.
To the divine silence of the labyrinth guides who sacrifice their liberation for those who have not yet awakened to the truth.
To the divine silence of the Lord of Death, the eternal unborn resident of the labyrinth who has sacrificed his own redemption for the redemption of all voyagers everywhere.
To the divine silence of the primordial being.
To the divine silence of the great sacrifice.
We offer homage, love, and hope.
But above all, we give our gratitude.
Obligatory Reader's Invocation.
So, the author has presented us with front matter. We've read that over the last 11 weeks. And then there's a gate that is set up. And the gate is this particular invocational prayer. It's letting us know where we are. That's where we are when we begin the fundamental part of this volume of work. It's Harry, where is it, or you might know, where is it that, loose your shoes for you stand upon holy ground? It's one of those in the Old Testament. Pardon?
I don't recall, David.
Is that where it is?
Moses before the burning bush.
Yeah.
And somebody said something on
loose your shoes for you stand upon holy ground. And that's the work that we're doing now. And by that we mean to, for this brief period of time, to the extent that we're able to do, we hold ourselves on the footpath of the essential self. We stand on that ledge. And because we've developed that, ever so slightly we begin to develop a handhold in that world. Let us spend then that time together with fellow practitioners who come together and want to be in that space for a brief period of time. It's like an orientation picnic. We come together and say, this is it, right?
Yeah.
And we're given guideposts as we go along. And by that I mean like signs in the way, and the sign says, here it is. It's called the obligatory.
Mm-hmm. David Sierra says that that biblical reference is Exodus 3:5.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any Dante?
Any Dante fans?
Or how about
any Inferno fans?
So when
we could all quote and hope all.
That's it. And so when he's about to truly begin his journey,
mm-hmm.
so he's still in the world kind of, and weird things happen, then Virgil comes along, grabs him by the hand, says, hey, let's go check this out. And what's on the door, what does it say then, Ivan?
Abandon hope, all who enter here.
Yes.
Abandon hope, all ye who enter. He's given the warning, then he's saying, you're about to go into a place that's not that familiar to you. And that's an okay thing, okay? It's an okay thing. This is not about getting contact high and feeling pretty good because we're with cool people and stuff like that. Because that's not us. This is a learning expedition, and we are in, from a particular point of view, we are on uncharted part of the map. It's not a part of the map that is charted by regular folk. So I'm kind of going on and on about this particular prayer.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, David, I like this idea of yours about the reader. You know, like in a sense, I'm not the reader. Maybe I can be the reader, or I could be the reader. So the reader is a kind of sort of an archetypal entity. I mean, my impression I got last week from reading through those the six worlds is that this is particularly the way we read it. But I think that even if I read that aloud myself, it is an out of body experience. In other words, that if I go where that speaker is speaking from in the six worlds, it's very much not anchored in the human world or in one corner of the labyrinth or in a very limited reality frame or something. You know, it's completely fluid. It's this really unusual out-of-body experience. And I'm thinking that this doorway reading here that you're talking about is it partakes of that quality also. Because now it's sort of the obligatory reader's invocation. It's what the reader invokes, and not myself as a person. Myself as a person, I don't know what is the divine silence of the labyrinth, guys. You know, what is the ancient mind? I mean, what is all this? You know, I don't. It's actually not very penetrable.
It's not conducive. Brain.
Yeah.
And in order to approach it then, I think the author is trying to suggest in bold letters here, you're in a different planet here. And, I hear all this stuff about out-of-body experience and all of that stuff. Really what it means for me is that the body is no longer, and the historical personality is no longer the guide.
Yeah, he's not in the driver's seat.
The historical personality is no longer in the guide, and we're among friends here, so we're going to go ahead and do that together.
Wonderful. This is what we come here together for.
That's what we come, because together we can share a particular type of wisdom, and we can talk and learn and think in terms of how does the compass work now that we've gone to this particular gate.
Exactly. This is where you start.
You know, David,
go ahead.
I can't help but sense that these are the words of the essential self that has finally liberated itself from the dominant force of the organic machine and the historical personality. So what we're hearing for the first time are the words of our own essential self describing who it is and where it is, and isn't that wonderful?
And you know, it's some other entity, or it's not. What I'm trying to say is, let's own the fact that we are essential selves, and that we are learning to be capable voyagers here. So when Dante enters into this remarkable voyage, every step of the way he has a guide. And you know, I'm sure Ivan remembers this, that for both in the Inferno and in Purgatorio, it's Virgil. And then he has to, Virgil can go no further, if you recall. Mm-hmm. And Beatrice comes. Mm-hmm. He kind of berates Dante a little bit, but picks him up and says, okay, now let's go where no human has gone before. And that's where we are now. And even, I don't know why I'm on Divine Comedy all of a sudden, but it certainly is coming up right now, because the first two-thirds of it are the human realms.
Mm-hmm.
They're fundamentally, and it's fascinating, you know, how the various humanness unfolds itself. And then suddenly Beatrice says, you know, Virgil, you just can't make it here. You can't come into the divine because you've got some issues. First of all, you're not Christian. Well, that's been debated, that whole thing. And why he was selected by Dante is another whole thing. But Beatrice comes, the feminine, the divine feminine comes forth and now brings him into the space, shows him the space, does not dictate the space to him, but shows him the space. And then it's by his wherewithal that he's able to go to the next level. So I believe that's what we're presented with here now. And it's in bold letters between these two parts of the book. Flip, and now we come forth into this new realm. And what a beautiful way that Silverdale's put it. I think it's just terrific.
I wanted to speak to that just a little bit about this. This is always one of my favorite pieces to running the Labyrinth Readers course, is to spend a little time with this particular set of lines. The first part about it is, of course, that there is the word obligatory, and it implies a number of things. And if we consider for a moment that the word obligation, of course, comes from obligatory, but it also stems from something else, which I like to reference. If you look down the line on the page, the word to is the opening line for each of those lines until you get to the last two, and it says we, and then it says but. And in my little brain, my little bookkeeper brain, when there is a pattern, I look for something that is being implied behind the pattern. And just as Silverdale was speaking about it, the qualities of the essential self are being stated after the words, to the divine silence of. And then what is it?
Well, the twos are a prayer.
All the twos are a prayer.
Yeah. And
they're an honoring, they're an homage, etc. Yes.
Silverdale, if you can recall what you said, which was so bang on, and enter that into the log if you feel like it, that would be one. It's on the recording, but
very helpful.
It's so succinct that, you know, I feel that sense of freedom that we've been freed at last.
Christ. It's a whole other.
And the other
people.
The other word that is at the beginning of this title of this page is obligatory readers, and I know last week that you invoked readerness, the quality of reading, the character of the reader, the being read to, the receiving of a reading. All of those are inherent in this, but the last word is invocation. And for me, when the word invocation is stated, it is a given that it is a prayer, but also, for me, an invocation is spoken aloud. It is contained in the material world and the exterior world, my inner and my outer, spoken inside and outside. They are joined. So when I look at this, for me, the two is where I am, going of all the characters of my essential self, and the last quality that is named is the one that I impose, which is
right.
My gratitude, my gratitude for the opportunity to invoke and to perform obligation as a reader.
David, there's offerings here in the log.
Yeah,
oh, yes.
Go ahead, please. Whoever's going to read.
It's from Gnostic Man. Despite the mysterious quality of the obligatory reader's invocation, each line is somehow familiar. We recognize something known within us.
Okay.
Thank you.
Kind of
needs to be said.
Reflects what George is saying. Go ahead.
That's it.
That's it?
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything else in there yet. I thought that one was worth offering.
Absolutely, yeah.
Another thing that I found interesting here that kind of grabbed me, as I don't remember who was reading the lines, but the unborn God, the unborn God. In other words, we're calling up to a point of someone who does not incarnate.
So each of the various lines will invoke something of varying degrees of familiarity to different people. And hold on to that. Just note it. Doesn't have to go further than that.
Mm-hmm.
Just note it, and using the great terminology that Silverdale has given us, you know, there's a vibratory sensation that'll be unique to the noting of that.
It's like David. There's a vibratory sensation for the king having no clothes, what all and whatever.
Yes. And if you can get to that position and it's okay, you begin to become free. So I'm spending a little bit of time on this partly because I've had an unusual week. And it's been, from a certain point of view, I've been getting billboards, like neon signs flashing in front of me of what to pay attention to. And all of it is centering around this idea of the obligatory reader's invocation, and that this invocation is, it's like saying, okay, it's okay to look from that set of eyes now because you're the voyager and you're going to step out there, you're about to step out, go ahead and go on out with that set of eyes because you're able to. And then we can begin to provide something to our fellow voyagers. I've had two individuals that I'm working with very closely that are, to the extent I'm able to, that are in significant physical challenges.
And part of, you know, there's a certain, we have to recognize the reality of that. I don't know how to put this. There's a level of knowledge that when you are in that position, there's a level of understanding of this material. And, you know, we have, right after this, you know, this is an old flyer, you'll remember. And there's a, I was given a flyer, how to be with those who are dying. And the guide, and that's what we're talking about here, it's a dual way of starting to learn how to be a voyager is in part how to do readings. Is Star Ananda on? She's in the trenches. Yeah, she's in the trenches with working through the Labyrinth Readers course itself, which is a, what is it, 12 weeks or something like that?
A 12-lesson plan. And
12
of course
lesson
you can,
plan.
You can do it as you choose, but yeah.
Yeah, that's 12 lessons. And you work your way through actual practical manners of doing that. And as you do that, you start to learn how to do that. And the next several pages, then, of this particular book, The American Book of the Dead, starts to discuss that. And what the what it's like for the reader, then, to be preparing themselves to begin giving that service to the voyager.
It's an interesting way of saying that, because what you're actually doing is you're not actually giving a form of service. You actually have simply made an agreement. It's almost a contractual agreement to be the sound of the teaching for the voyager. Like Ivan was saying, you know, when you give the reading, you are participating in the reading. It might not be something that you personally have grasped, but you have made the agreement to sound it, to say it aloud, to deliver it. And that's all that is an agreement to participate in what is available for the voyager. You don't actually have to do more than that. You don't have to have understanding.
No.
You don't have to do anything except just open the book, you know, light the candle, ring the bell, deliver the instruction as absolutely attentive as you are able, and then, you know, complete it. That's all that's required to be a reader. So those instructions right after this page, they're actually just helping you remind you, because I think we've all been read to as children. We were all read to. We know what it's like to listen and be told, to be read to. We're being read to. It's a very specific form of interaction.
And some of us, I'm going to the parental relationship, you know, have also had the ability to read to our children, which is, it's a remarkable form of invocation that you create, because it's a sacred space, and you help create it with your child.
And worlds arise.
And they certainly do.
Before
and they
your
certainly
eyes.
So,
you know, I'd like to just add, one of the ways I have formulated this for myself is, in the heart of the great central sun, we are all one. Only in the here and now are we differentiated. So as we read, we're reading from the heart of the great central sun and reaching the heart of the great central sun and everybody for the particular individual we're reading for. Our essential self is reading to our essential self located in another person.
That's right.
Well said.
That's
yeah.
And that's why when somebody is apparently passive in the space, When someone is, let's just say like there were seven of us reading to this particular document, but everybody was putting in a particular level of effort. I know the people that were here were putting in a lot of effort to be with this material. It's no different. There's just the voice box and the recipient who is giving back. So it's a continuum of accessing that space that George is telling us about and working to do it. It's like we're opening it up. We're opening it up and say, yeah, I'm going to be there a little bit more, another minute today. Just going to stretch it just a little bit. Yeah, there you go. That's good. Okay?
Yeah, I think when you're calling on yourself to be present, like George is describing, it is a matter of drawing out, pulling forth, whatever language you want to use about that. You're filling up that space with your beingness. That's, you know, how you draw forth, and from there you're able to sit in this space, deliver a reading on behalf of others and yourself.
Yeah, you're fulfilling a post at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all it is.
Mm-hmm.
You're fulfilling a post, and in order to do it, you have to stand in the place that George was telling us about. Can we stand in that particular place? Because if we can get ourselves there, it might help the voyager to go, oh, right, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like collateral benefit.
Yeah, mutual benefit.
It's not collateral damage, it's collateral.
Collateral benefit.
Benefit. And so.
There's a reciprocal
resonance.
That is what occurs. And so we're in a sense, we're reminding the person, but we're not reminding them by saying, hey, don't forget to love everybody. Don't forget that everything's beautiful. We're all part of everything. Uh-uh. You don't tell them that. You are that. And in being that, in your being, to the extent that you're emanating that and you're transmitting that to those individuals, it is that's the gift that you can say. And then they can say, oh, yeah, you're the guide. That's right. And they'll remember the guide, the eternal guide, because they remember the eternal guide.
David, there are more offerings whenever you want them.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing. I was in a space, well, I'll just say it. I won't say what the space was, but Pat might. Anyway, it was a very intense situation in a particular room with two people, and EJ was there, and he said, he grabbed my hand, all right? Grabs my hand, and he goes, oh, yeah, you've been there. I've been where you are, and you've been where I am, and I've been where you are, and you've been where I am. And it was obvious at that moment the reciprocal, vibratory sensation that was going on. It has nothing to do with the external. That's what I'm trying to get to. It doesn't have anything to do, can you do what that guy can do? That's the external stuff. It was the white palace, and it was pretty clear. Let's just say. Go ahead. Who's going to say something? Harry, go ahead.
Oh, Gnostic man has written the following the more attention we can bring to the reading, the more we align with the archetype, the eternal reader. We give the reader substance so it can be real to the recipient.
So that's hard work. Yes.
And Scafuti has added that Osho wrote a book on this, The Message Beyond Words, A Dialogue with the Lord of Death.
Method, it's a message
beyond worlds.
The message beyond worlds, yes.
Worlds appearing. Excellent. Yeah. It's this coincidence. Pay attention to that around you. I was on the phone with somebody and driving, and just one of the things I said was, right now the color that's being presented to me is the white. And then, you know, we have to remember, you have to get that Appendix A out. Appendix A is the attributes of the six dimensions, okay? Get those out. You're going to see each one has colors, it's an intensity, and whatever the realm it is. We're going to need that pretty soon, okay?
We always need it.
Go ahead, Harry. I'm sorry. Is there more? I'm sorry.
No, that's all. I think that's all, David.
Okay.
Well, no, I spoke too soon. Scafuti. Yes. We give the reader substance for the other, and also reminding ourselves of the silence, of the guide, of the protection, etc. And as we do it over and over and integrate this into our being, we become the silence when we read. And Mark Roach has written, with respect to what Scafuti wrote, another repeating pattern is the obligatory reader's invocation, the divine silence. Would love to hear more about people's thought about this. It seems to be a strong central theme of the invocation, like what Scafuti wrote about becoming the silence. And that's all that's
okay.
Here potentially.
You know, we.
You're not going to go into the next bit, are you?
Well,
are you going to stay right here for a minute?
Yeah,
minute
we'll stay
more?
Right here for a minute more.
So, in relation to the things that folks have been putting in the chat and speaking about on the phone, if you think about the path of the reader as being one in which you agree to a particular discipline, we find the skill and technique to enhance the practice or discipline that we have made the agreement about, and then you assign the particular effort of that practice for the benefit of all beings everywhere or a specific voyager. So it seems to me that when you are starting to perform a practice here, or take on a discipline, or begin a whatever you want to call it, you know, taking on a form of obligation, you're fulfilling a function, but in a very particular manner. First, you make the agreement. Next, you develop some skill and technique, mostly by doing, which is not like a lot of other practices in the spiritual realm. Most of the spiritual realm practices are not doing. This is a very active practice. Mm-hmm. And it requires silence internally and speaking externally. So it's the opposite of most of the other disciplines that we have. And thirdly, it's not for you. It's not for yourself. It is distinctly and definitely on behalf of all voyagers everywhere and for the benefit of the Absolute. So, to me, this obligatory reader's invocation is a statement of how the practice can be best done because it comes from silence, but it is oral.
We've, I always figured that I did a whole bunch of stuff on prayer a few years ago, trying to figure out how can you actually pray? Because most prayer is, you know, like help my dog,
yeah.
Or forgive me my sins, or maybe your prayer is just like, God is great. And, you know, and behind it there is a little sheen of the ego saying, how am I doing, big guy? You know, am I doing pretty good? Because if I am doing pretty good, then I get a couple of brownie points.
Can I have a gold star, please?
Yeah, or, you know, what is it that the Boy Scouts get, the eagle?
Oh,
a badge.
A badge.
You get a badge. So, you know, you get a prayer badge. And that's and the whole point of it is like, how can you possibly pray and not do all of that? And then I've said many times about my favorite is Reverend Ike, who was down in LA in the 70s. And Reverend Ike, I liked him so much because he was just straightforward about it. He says, get your treasures in heaven now. He says, go ahead and pray for that Cadillac, pray for that money. And I thought that was honest. Because there's a lot. So how do you get not in that realm? And the only way to do it was a great deal of inner effort. Where if you can get to the place, what did you call it, George?
Tell me.
The great solar.
Oh, in the heart of the great central sun.
So you're in the heart of the great central sun. In
we
order
are one.
To. It says right here, in the divine silence. The divine silence and the divine silence until all that's left of you is the ability to say, and with gratitude. Gratitude. And you are no more, except you're doing, you're standing in that position, but you're skilled enough, and this for me distinguishes this path from the way of the monk, which I honor a great deal, but it distinguishes it in that where you're saying, okay, I am in that place of silence, but I'm going to do something. I'm going to be with this person who is in transit, and I am going to be with them. And the only way to do it is the way that Pat described, is to be standing in the place of divine silence. And only you can tell. Well, it's not actually true, but
David, there's an abundance of offerings on the web. I can only suggest that people read them.
The place of divine silence. Go ahead, please.
Well, I hardly like they were gestating for the first 50 minutes of our class.
We're ready for all comers here, buddy. Bring them on.
Okay, let me see. Okay,
he
here we
know
go.
What
Scafuti, we give the reader substance for the other and also reminding ourselves of the silence, of the guide, of the protection, etc. And as we do it over and over and integrate this into our being, we become silence when we read. And Mark Roach adds, well, I'm going to have to skip down. Mark Roach says, and the divine silence is referenced with each of the beings that are invoked. Another related question is, since there is nothing but the clear light, are all the beings being invoked totally different, or are they different facets of the same thing? And Silverdale.
Who asked that question? Who asked that question?
Mark Roach.
Okay, go ahead.
That was Mark Roach. And Silverdale responds, a fundamental characteristic of higher consciousness is silence. That is, the absence of sound and motion, the absence of fracturing and fragmentation, the absence of dissonance. It is the felt, sensed, perceived awareness of the unity of everything existing. Then Mark adds that there was a well-known spiritual group that actually gave Spiritual Achievement of the Year awards.
All right.
And then, and then slipping back into a different vibe entirely, Lost Horizon says, behind each apparently separate being is the divine silence. It's to the divine silence that is offered homage, love, hope, and gratitude.
Thank you. Nicely put.
There are others too, but that's the gist of it.
This is serious work. It's serious work that we come to with a light heart. So we are walking into the divine silence, and we're doing it together. We're doing it together here because we are able to do it together. And that we now know that we're not isolated, but we're coming forth from that point of view to be together in this particular type of space. It's a good form of work. It's worth the stretch, this is. So the next page. So we've been able to make one page.
Oh, no, we did a lot more than a page.
Barely a page.
We did more than a page.
I agree with that.
Well, I think we did the whole book.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
What more do we need to know?
Yeah.
This is pretty good.
Yeah. I was tempted today to bring in my treasured copy of a red vello bound 1974 typed version of the Book of the Dead with fabulous illustrations in it. And I was looking to see where was this page, because as David said to me before we began tonight, this page, you know, it's the introductory matter and the six worlds, and then it's obligatory reader's invocation and the first stage. Like, how did it, you know, how was it devised that it came to be like that? And I look back at these earlier versions I have, and it is in the same format, even though some of the actual writing is not the same. You know, there's other stuff in there. It's still, this is the configuration. It's the get you ready, and then there's, okay, here you go. Now you can go. So I agree with George. We've done a lot more than a page, but actually we haven't yet done anything, because the doing, and if we're talking about the doing of an essential self, what does an essential self do?
Correct.
You know, that we're talking nonsense there. But if we're talking about this text, the text actually has got us to the place where we can begin to have our eyes opened in a certain way. We can have it be revealed. What is this book of the dead? That's what we're going to be looking at now, is the book. That was front matter. Now we're at the book.
Yeah, now we've entered into the chamber, and the chamber has said, here's where you're at.
Yeah.
Okay, here's where you're at. Let me just try something here real quick. What we're learning is to be in the space of the essential self, in that, bathe ourselves in that, and then to learn to do something while we are there. And to me, that's what's revolutionary about this, is that are we able to be in that space and perform functions, in a sense, in the world? And to me, this becomes then the kernel of the understanding of that I am in the world, but I am certainly not of the world. I am birthed from a different place. There you have it.
I'd like to make a comment here. I don't want to be a downer, but it might wind up that way.
That was a good introduction anyway.
It's a very beautiful thing to think of the higher end of this, but what this is about in practice is the willingness to enter these realms. And as we enter these realms, our ability to get onto that island, in other words, to be in the bardo of that particular chamber and not, be swinging like a pendulum. But if we didn't have all these, let's say, impure things or in our being, well, we wouldn't be going through the bardo. So, I want to keep in my consciousness that the purpose of understanding the divine aspect of it and integrating it within myself is to give me strength to be in the bardo so that I can merge with the clear light. And if I'm not willing to look at all these things that are going to come up in these chambers or dive into them when they happen, and think, oh, I know it all, well, that defeats the whole purpose of this.
We have to know and learn how to sidestep certain things and how to work with certain things at different times is exactly right.
Is it really sidestepping, though?
Sometimes that's what's called for in the particular space. It's not time. It may or may not be time to deal with that. And that's where the skilled guide comes in to know, do we need to deal with this, or do we just work in this other manner right now? Sometimes you set certain things aside because that's not what's called for in that particular space. And that's what we're learning to do. And I think we're going to have a lot of examples of this, Judy, as we go through the rest of the book here, because there's a lot.
So it's becoming cognizant of what's appropriate.
That's right.
This moment of now.
And that's the skill of learning the etiquette of bardo voyaging and voyaging together. Because, sometimes you've got to deal with it, but just because it's there doesn't mean you need to deal with it.
I understand.
Sometimes
okay.
The skill set is to tiptoe around it because you're able to. Right?
Yeah, it's not requiring anything. It may be in the space, but it doesn't require anything, so you don't need to attend to it if it's not a requirement of the space. And that's another part of this. The functionality of a group in a space is amazingly fluid, and one of the skills that you that you, it's like you have to have, this will be a gross form, but as if you have tentacles coming out of all of your skins, your multiple skins, because you need to have perceptual contact with multiple other versions of whatever there is. Oh, yeah, that's really gross. I'm sorry. That's just a visual that I have at the moment.
Oh, I got it.
Anyway, group-wise, the strength is receptivity greater than and sensitivity greater than and usually experience greater than any one or collection of the whole. It just works that way.
Yeah.
You can pretty much count on if the group has awareness of its groupness, and that is that invoking of the larger, then you will have the qualities of the larger. So you're in a learning mode as the individual just by being in a group, and you can gain group knowledge from just being. Yeah.
And as we're able as a group to work together and we elevate ourselves in whatever that means, then a different level of knowledge comes to us. Accessing the knowledge is not a linear technology.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. And there are people right here in this room that I can guarantee you it's only when you get into those higher spaces and then bingo, they come on. It's like a light switch happened. And thank God they have that skill set.
Yep. We can count on it.
And that's the point, is that you can count on it. And you can count on it. What that partly means is that you can count on the person having the skill set to be able to honor the divine silence. Thank you. So maybe we'll call it a day. We'll call it a night.
All right, night.
Thank you
very
much.
It's a silent night. Thank you, everybody, for coming. It was just a delightful to see you again. Good night.
Thank you all. Good night.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you all.
Thank you.